What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Impact Defense Podcast. This is episode 127. Today, we are going to be joined. I know, it's amazing. We are going to be joined by Dr. Sharice Johnson. Okay. All right. So this is one of the lost episodes that we have done. Unfortunately, we had her on to come on 124, and we ended up having to move things around because we recorded an entire podcast with her, but we used the term recorded very lightly because it actually did not record. We got finished the whole thing and it did not record, and I was so mad at Zoom that day.
So sad, because quite frankly, it is probably one of, if not like the best podcast we have ever recorded.
Yeah. It's definitely up there. It is definitely up there.
And we kind of judge that by how much we have to cut out sometimes.
That's true, too. But also, just in the subject matter, the amount of things we think, man, this is so valuable. And we've had a lot of wonderful, fun conversations. But there was so much value in that. And something that I feel like people just do not touch on enough when it comes to self-defense. And that was something I was super excited about, redoing that. And I was so thankful that she was willing to come back.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, without moving on too much further, let's go ahead and bring Dr. Sharice Johnson on. All right. And we would like to welcome Dr. Sharice Johnson to the podcast again. And some of you might be saying, hey, wait a second. I don't remember her being on the podcast before. But actually, we recorded a podcast. Well, we did a podcast with her before. And unfortunately, it did not record. So
it happens. It happens. I'm glad to be back. It was awesome first time. And I have no doubt that today is going to be equally as amazing.
Well, I would like to thank you for being willing to do all of this again after all of that. To
offer your expertise on a subject that this side of it doesn't get discussed very much.
That is
so
very
true.
So
we're super excited.
Yeah, we were super excited the first time, but after going through it one time, we're even more excited this time. So.
I can't stand telling people to listen to our podcast just because I know they're going to have to hear my voice. And I can't do it. But your episode was one I was pushing to some friends of mine.
Aww.
And they're like, that sounds amazing. I can't wait to listen to it. And then it didn't record.
Yeah. You just kind of kept them a dangling carrot. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming, right? So, he's not going to let you down.
All right. So let's go ahead and get started. So what inspired you to write the book Inspired Mindsets?
Inspired Mindsets.
Yeah, what inspired you to write Expired Mindsets? I mean, it's a tongue twister, right? So that happened. Yeah. Honestly, it was my daughter's initial thought around, Mom, you should write a book, right? It's the middle of the pandemic. And I said, I need you to go away. I'm a therapist in the middle of a pandemic. But then as I was working through with clients and with organizations and talking with friends and colleagues, I realized that there was a need because so many people were kind of sitting with themselves once everything slowed down and they realized, wow, all of these different areas of my life that I thought I had moved past are coming to the surface, and the things that I would normally do to get past them, I actually can't do anymore. And also they sat and thought about, wow, that was a coping mechanism. That was a coping mechanism. Oh, avoidance is a coping mechanism. So I wanted to create a resource that helped walk people through, well, what do you do if you find yourself in a place of, I've had some really awful things happen to me and I don't know how to let go of it. And it's changed what I believe about myself.
I love the overall idea of your book. Can you describe a little bit more on the subject of the main message of your book and how it can really benefit people, especially with the mindset of self-defense?
Yeah. So if you think about the concept of self-defense, I love the brain. Let me put that in there. Our brain is wired to keep us safe, right? Mm-hmm. But there are times and seasons in our life where we start doing something or we're reacting to maybe a bad situation when it comes to self-defense. And we realize this may have been beneficial for me right in the beginning as I was being honest and acknowledging what I've been through or trying to get through that really challenging and scary moment. But now I'm holding on to that same mindset, and now it's holding me back. I'll give a quick example. Let's say that someone has been through a situation where they felt like they were violated by someone of the opposite sex. And that is overwhelming. It is terrifying on so many levels. Well, if then you adopt a mindset that says, I just don't want to be in contact and I won't trust anybody that's not the same sex of me, then you run the risk of going, but this is making it really hard for me to move forward in life because I'm going to have to work with people that are going to be the opposite sex. And maybe I don't want to be by myself for the rest of the life. So if I've been in a situation that has rightfully made me feel like I need to defend myself, but I take it too far and I don't work through it in a healthy way, the defense mechanism of keeping everybody out actually keeps me in. And then I start to feel lonely or isolated because I'm terrified, because my mind believes if this happened once, then it might keep happening to me. So we have to work through that in a different way.
Yeah, and sometimes that's not even just a conscious decision to avoid. It's your brain trying to protect you and making you averse to it without even sometimes your knowledge.
Right. Spot on. Right? Your whole body goes into what we call fight, flight, freeze. And then there's another one that a lot of people don't know about, which is fawn, right? Fight is pretty self-explanatory. You can be pretty aggressive. Flight is the moment you feel those body sensations come up for you, you back away and shut down and escape a situation. Freeze, you become a little paralyzed. And sometimes it can feel like you're unmotivated because you're just overwhelmed. But fawn is a tricky one. Fawn is the one that says, I just want everything to be okay. So I'm going to overcompensate and do whatever anybody wants so that I can try to stay safe. And it is an internal reaction that happens subconsciously. And you'll feel it before you will often be able to like recognize it. But there is a way out.
You know, that's interesting. I've never actually heard that. And I mean, I've been in self-defense instruction forever, but what you're describing is things I have definitely seen with people in a lot of ways. So that's, I like that. I think we'll have to add that to what we, when we talk to people about things.
Yeah. Fawn is F-A-W-N. And mm-hmm. It's not talked about as often, but it's actually one of the more common ones. Mm-hmm. That comes later and is important to track, especially after dealing with a situation where you felt defenseless.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when we talk about things like this, we might even say some things are freeze that would actually be fawn.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we probably mislabel that a good deal, especially in our women's self-defense seminars, because thinking back, we have had some responses that would definitely qualify under fawn.
Yeah.
Women who said that their response would just be to go along with it because it would probably end better for them.
Yeah. And you don't know what you don't know until you know it.
Yeah.
But then that's the one that we find creates a lot of guilt, right? Before a situation happens where you have to defend yourself, we would all like to say, oh, if I was ever in this situation, I would fight back. Oh, you really don't know how your body is going to respond. But I have worked with multiple individuals because one of my specialties is trauma, that part of their struggle is, why didn't I fight? Why didn't I flight? And I didn't freeze. I went along with it because that was kind of what I thought was the best thing to do. And whatever you do in that moment is what is, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important not to beat yourself up. But the benefit of what you all do is if we can teach young girls, young women, and men, I think it goes both ways, these skills ahead of time, then you're kind of learning the plays before the game.
Right.
And then it allows you to have a different automatic response going in. So to anyone listening, I just want to say, don't wait until there's the fear or threat of something or something happens, if possible. Really think about this as a life skill and going, you know, when my children are around 13, 14 years old, I want to start arming them with this thought just in case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So have you ever worked with someone who has been in a self-defense situation and fought in it and had to live with that, like knowing that they hurt the other person?
Yeah, I've definitely worked with several individuals who have experienced that. And there's a lot of different emotions around that. And all the people that I've worked with over the last 20 years, one thing I can say, at least for those I've worked with, none of them have felt proud that they fought back. You know, there's still this element of them that goes, I'm glad I survived. And I realized that it could have been worse. But there's still this dynamic of they were individuals who by nature, they're not fighters. Mm-hmm. So it kind of showed them something about themselves that they didn't expect. And then there's kind of another category where some people turn on that fight and then they struggle to turn it off.
Yeah.
So they are now being aggressive in a way that they didn't expect, but they're like, I want people to know that I'm powerful and to be afraid of me because I don't want the same thing to happen, but I also feel like I'm not really being myself.
Yeah.
So there can be a lot of emotions around that fighting back.
I try to always make sure that I read a book of someone before we have them on the podcast. I really want to understand, but I really thoroughly enjoyed your book. Just saying that. But you do say a lot about releasing patterns and stuff like that. What kind of negative patterns can result from having to act in self-defense outside of like what you've already talked about?
Yeah. So negative patterns around having to respond to a situation where you felt defenseless, they're enormous, right?
Yes.
But part of what I'm talking about is the mental patterns that can be in place around mm-hmm. what you say to yourself, thoughts you have about yourself, because again, you can have an experience like that and it changes, it can change your identity, it can change your level of confidence. So we have what we call primary emotions and secondary emotions. Primary emotions are usually the first thing that we feel, but we also judge those heavily. So if I've been hurt by a situation or disappointed or devastated and I don't want to acknowledge that, then I'll go to another emotion that I think is more helpful. Mm. So what we sometimes see is when you go through an experience like the ones that you work with and we're talking about today, that can change the patterns of your relationships in terms of the kind of people that you surround yourself with or the kind of people that you think you're worth. It can change your ability to focus at work. It can literally alter your memory, your focus, and your concentration. We actually see a lot of individuals after a huge trauma that may struggle and be diagnosed with PTSD or ADHD because it's mimicking those brain changes. Mm. So patterns can also change in how you take care of yourself. Because if I don't feel good about myself, then I may not take care of myself the same way. Like, let's say, for example, they were really active and went to the gym or worked out every day, but now they're afraid to do things because they don't feel a sense of safety and security. Their pattern of health can change because now they don't want to engage in activities that they once used to enjoy, but that might have been helping them mentally. Mm. So we can see it show up in a lot of ways. And then the last one that I'll say that can also slide under the radar is it can change your pattern of think. So we don't think a lot about how we use food as a coping mechanism, and people are going to kind of either be overwhelmed and not eat and restrict, or they might be overwhelmed and eat more because they're trying to numb the anxiety. Same dynamic, it just presents differently, but that's another pattern of the way I show up and engage with food and how I nourish myself has changed because I'm trying to manage all of this adrenaline and cortisol and stress that's going through my body.
Could understanding your book before an event help prevent someone from developing that negative pattern after being in a self-defense situation?
Yeah. You know, so if we're honest, we really can't prevent how we respond to a situation, but having this knowledge beforehand would give you the tools to go, if something happens to me, here's what I can use instead of default, right? Because there's no way to project how we will respond. But if we have mental tools and physical tools and good support in our life, then those are three really important things that help us get through difficult challenges. And then we kind of know, okay, I recognize what I'm doing and I can understand why my brain and my body are responding this way, but I want to go back to this resource in Expired Mindsets. I want to go back and make sure that I stay up to date with the things that are going to help me feel good physically and let people know that I'm not okay. So I feel like it's one of those dynamics of a toolbox. It's a really helpful thing to have in your toolbox, and anything that you have prior to something happening, you're more likely to use it than after. It's really hard after something happens to have the emotional energy to start something new and introspective. So doing it beforehand just kind of sets you up to handle it better.
So going back to your book, you talk a lot about self-awareness. Do you have any kind of like practical tools to basically help someone in their self-awareness and identifying and releasing expired mindsets?
Yeah, one of the, you know, there's a couple things that you can do to help self-awareness. Let me first say that being self-aware doesn't require a lot of time. People will often avoid self-awareness, one, because it's uncomfortable, but also there's this part of them that thinks, well, I'm supposed to have an hour every morning to be self-aware. Not true. So let's remove that from your mind. Self-awareness is something that I want you to see as like little mini self-checks throughout the day, right? So one of them could be you take 60 seconds, you kind of sit back in your chair, and you just get quiet and breathe. And you're going to notice as you breathe, what do I feel? You can do what we call in mindfulness a compassionate body scan, which means you're kind of thinking about your body and scanning it down from head all the way through your nose, your chin, your shoulders, and notice, do I feel grounded or do I feel tense? So that's a really great way to create some body awareness. And then releasing what you're feeling is a matter of going, okay, if I'm feeling tense and I realize how tight I am, what do I need, right? So I've got these thoughts that I'm aware of, and now I've got to figure out what will help me kind of support myself. Well, oh, I realize I'm feeling anxious. So I always feel better when I spend time with people that I care about. So I'm going to make plans this afternoon to make some good connections. So compassionate body scan and sitting back is one. Another one would be meditation. For those that are open to it, it is an extremely powerful dynamic that not only helps us in create awareness, but it actually changes the structure of our brain in between 5 and 10 minutes. So it's one of the things that we encourage people who've experienced levels of trauma, even if they feel like it was a mild level of trauma, it helps restructure the fear center of your brain. And then the last one, I feel like can be very helpful for people who've experienced traumas and they have really difficult thoughts at night. So we often will see that people will be okay during the day. They're going on about their life. Nighttime comes, they start to get anxious because they fear, I'm going to have a flashback or a memory. And then all of those mindsets come to surface. So before you go to bed at night, you want to put your hand on top of your heart and then one hand on top of your belly or your diaphragm and do 12 rounds of diaphragmatic breathing, which is in through the nose and out through the mouth. And doing that signals your vagus nerve, which is a part of your nervous system, and tells your body we're okay, right? And you can do that before you go to bed, or if you have a bad dream or flashback and you wake up in the middle of the night, 12 more rounds of that signals the vagus nerve and will help you rest, because sleep can be really impacted.
I like that. We actually, in like our martial arts stuff, we actually talk about, you know, breathing down deep, you know, all the way down into your diaphragm and getting that, and yes, kind of getting that, to use that to get your breath back, to calm yourself, to do these things as well. So
yeah, we call it Ibuki yes. breathing.
Well, that's the Japanese is Ibuki.
And then yes. my mom calls it Darth yes. Vader breathing.
All fit. All of those are accurate, and they really are helpful. And I think sometimes when people, you know, might take your class and they experience that, sometimes people may not realize just how important that is to do, even if they're working on things outside of their, like, put that breathing part back in there, because that is signaling your body, okay, it's okay for us to engage in these things, and mm-hmm. we're safe. So yeah, awesome.
I like that. So one of our favorite self-defense quotes by Horia and Gracie, and he says, and the first step in learning to, you know, learning to defend yourself is believing the fact that you are worth defending. I absolutely love that quote. It's one of the things that we have put out there a lot. How can those limiting beliefs and negative self-talk hold someone back actually from self-defense?
Oh, yeah. Limiting beliefs are a big part of what keeps us from acting in a way that can support ourselves. So if I'm an individual and I already have a very negative internal narrative about myself, then there can be this part of us when we are in a difficult situation where we think, this is my fault, I deserve this, I'm not surprised this has happened to me. And if that's what we believe before the moment, then it just continues after the moment and will make it difficult for us to heal. The other thing that I will say is people who prey on other individuals and are really looking for victims, they're listening for your insecurities. They're listening for your negativity. Sometimes it is people that see you and choose you at random, but our limiting beliefs, I fully believe, can even be seen in our posture.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Somebody that doesn't care about themselves, you can see it because you walk around and you don't give eye contact, or your shoulders are shrugged down, or you look afraid. And for someone that is looking to overpower, that is like a poster that says, this is the one, right?
Yeah.
So when we work on those limiting beliefs in advance, then it does create a part of us, you know, we don't have to walk around looking like He-Man or She-Ra, you know, but and nobody under the age of like 40 is going to even know it.
That's okay. They do, because I'm constantly referencing this. So yeah, we're good.
I knew before.
Well, that's for awesome. You. Did, but.
Yeah. But you will present differently. You'll be more aware. So it's important for us to be conscious of, people pay attention to what you say. And sometimes the wrong people are paying attention to what you say. And you deserve to think, you know, really well of yourself. The last thing that I will say is, if we're holding on to mindsets that speak to, I'm not confident, I don't deserve this, I don't belong, people don't care about who I am, then you have things that have happened to you in the past that you haven't worked through, because you didn't wake up that way. Like, we're not born thinking poorly about ourselves. So expiring a mindset is all about, I need to go back to those places and see where they happen and pull them up from the root so that I can live more free.
Yeah. So you were actually mentioning that there was actually a study done of violent criminals where they showed these, I want to say it was about 100 violent criminals. They showed them thousands of hours of people, or I'm sorry, thousands of people walking down sidewalk, same video, and with about 97%, the same, they all picked the exact same people that they were going to attack.
Wow.
And it had nothing to do with the size, gender, race, perceived religious beliefs, anything. It was all about how they carried themselves and everything. So one of the first things that we always tell people is walk with confidence, and you are much less likely to be targeted by someone who is a violent criminal looking for a target.
Yeah, that is fascinating. I'm not surprised, but that is fascinating. And we kind of put off, you know, an aura in, mm-hmm. in a lot of different ways. But wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
How can the principles in your book help someone overcome that mindset?
Yeah. So I walk everyone through multiple different kind of common mindsets that we think about in terms of bad things always happen to me, so why try? Or no one wants to really hear what I have to say, or I don't have a voice. I share bits and pieces about my life or bits and pieces of kind of fictionalized case studies based on people that I've worked with, and then really help you go through a three-step process of going, all right, how can I change this limiting belief? Because it's not a matter of, oh, I just don't want to believe that anymore. It doesn't work that way. That limiting belief comes up subconsciously. I really help you look at, how is this impacting me? Because I believe this way, what am I not doing? How am I holding myself back? Then I engage you in mindfulness activities that you can do. Of course, they're optional, that just help you go, wow, I read that chapter and it was really great, but it also brought up all of these things for me and I kind of feel it. I got you, right? Like, let's work that down a little bit. And then the last step is to do what I call recalibrate, which means, how can I change my language? This is what I've been telling myself over and over. Well, I've got to replace that with something. So what words am I willing to exchange so that I can go from, this always happens to me, why try, to, yes, I've had some difficult things happen, but there are good things ahead, so that it creates a level of neutrality and hope. And then that's the new language that you start telling yourself. And I walk you all the way through how to do that.
It's fantastic. And now we brushed on it a little bit, but what advice or what would you say to someone who is trying to overcome the expired mindsets that resulted from being in a self-defense situation and freezing, not acting, just froze?
Yeah. The biggest piece of advice that I would give anyone that feels like they froze is, be compassionate towards yourself and realize you went through something that you did not ask for, that is not your fault, that you did not deserve. And then the other thing that I would say is, if it's necessary for you, forgive yourself.
Yeah.
Right? You didn't do anything wrong, but that doesn't mean that the process of forgiveness still wouldn't be necessary or helpful. In the book, one of the things that I even mention in one of the chapters is, I forgive myself for everything I did in order to survive. Right? You need to recognize that you did what you could at the moment. And for some people, it is, all I could do was freeze and go in and try to distance myself emotionally from what was happening. And be patient with yourself. So be compassionate with yourself, forgive yourself, and be patient with yourself, because it takes time to get past this. I know it's painful, and there's the desire to go, give me the five steps that I can do to make this go away instantly, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way, but be patient with yourself.
Having compassion and patience for yourself is very, very hard for a lot of people. And I know I am one of those people that is very hard. I hold myself to a certain standard, and I should meet that standard in everything all the time. And sometimes having a little bit of self-compassion is kind of is hard for a lot of people.
Especially if you're your biggest critic. Sunday school teacher is also a life coach and a motivational speaker. And one of the things that I was talking to him about was just not feeling all I can think about, even when I do something that should be great, is everything that I did wrong. and could have done better. And one of the pieces of advice he gave me was, okay, so you've got a big inner critic, name it. Separate it from yourself by giving it a name. And whenever it comes up in unnecessary moments, address it by its name and have a conversation. Tell it to butt out.
Yeah.
And actually, it sounded so corny to me at the time, but I was going, well, he knows what he's talking about. So I did it. And it's actually really helped. I feel a lot freer to fail.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also just learning how to give yourself some context, or sometimes I'll tell people, well, let's widen the lens, right? You'll be really hard on yourself about a situation, which means I am taking on all of the blame and ownership for what happened and not thinking about, like, there's always a recipe. And it doesn't mean that I'm not taking on my part, but it is unrealistic to think that we're always going to do everything right. Like, that isn't going to happen. And we will handle things better if we go, oh, well, that stinks. That wasn't my goal. I really wanted to do better. But what can I do different next time? And if we can look at that with curiosity and reduce the judgment, we learn from it, right? We go, oh, here's why I didn't do as well as I wanted to. But now I know, here's how I can set this up the next time, and then let's see what happens. So I love to help people exchange criticism for curiosity and go, can I step back and just observe the situation and see what is this teaching me? Because I'll also go, sometimes our frustration is that we're like stepping into this new season, and there are just things that we don't know about how to operate on this level. So us not doing as well as we want just means we're learning, and we need the permission to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I tend to be like really hard on myself when it comes to like me teaching. Cause like there was this one time where I felt like I had a really good plan and I went into it head on. And then whenever it came time, I teach like the little dragons, which is like ages from like 3 to 6. So I had a really good plan. We were going to play karate, hot potato, and everything. And then whenever it came time for all that, the kids were just like rolling around here and there and everywhere. And they weren't exactly like passing around the ball. They were like throwing it. And so I just felt like everything was like falling down like dominoes, where it just wasn't really going anywhere. And so I remember right after the class was over, I just bolted upstairs and went behind a curtain and just like fully took on everything, where all the bad kids just kind of like were being bad and just blamed it on me. And so I ended up like texting him. My mom thought that like a parent said something, but it wasn't, a parent didn't say anything bad. It was just, I was so hard on myself because it didn't go like how I wanted it to.
Yeah.
So I ended up texting him because he was like sick at the time. So I ended up texting him like me in tears, was just like, it's not, it didn't go very well. I just feel like I really let you down. It was just not. Yeah.
But I love your heart. And that's what I said. It's because we want to do so well. But like you said, one key thing, the kid. You don't have control over other people's actions. We can have the best plan in the world, and we still can't control other people. The only thing that we can choose is how we respond. And that's where flexibility and adaptability are two things that really help us move through difficult moments and release things, because who doesn't want your day, right? To... you know, be the way that you want. I mean, does anyone really have a day, honestly, where like everything goes the way that you want? So we also have to prepare ourselves, not prepare ourselves in a way that we're anxious and we want to control it, but we want to go, I've planned the best I can for this day, and we'll see what happens, right? I used to teach school, I'll say this real fast, and oh my gosh, what worked with each class each year was totally different. Like I could yes. have something and 1 year it was like, oh, this went so well. I'm going to put this in a plan and we're going to do it again. And then I would get the next class and be like, just kidding. Scrap this plan. We need to do something different. Not having it. Right. So every class, and sometimes even just like one or two people in that class, can change the whole dynamic. So you definitely will learn with time. I've got to be adaptable and I've got to be flexible because they need something different than the last group, but that's not a fault. That just is.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to explain afterwards, because it really was a fantastic idea for a class plan. There were so many different options that were age level appropriate, that should help them grow in certain areas, and should be very entertaining and fun. But whenever she went to do it, all she could see were the areas that weren't going according to the vision she had in her head. What she didn't see were the kids in the class that were grasping on and doing it. They were having a great time and enjoying it. And so all she could see were the things that were not going according to what she wanted. So she just has to train herself to look for the successes so that she doesn't feel quite as overwhelmed by the things that don't go according to plan, because there were a lot of 3 to 6 year olds in a class. So it's never going to go according to plan.
Right.
But all she could see were the 3 kids in the class that struggle with more structured environments. And it created a little bit of chaos.
Yeah.
But the parents, you know why that happened? Edges, were still seeing most of the kids really grasping on and having fun. And so that's what I'm seeing. Yeah. She's only seeing the 3 that aren't.
Yeah. And I would say probably what might have been happening is you're feeling it, right? So it wasn't even just about what other people were seeing. Like, you're feeling, oh, this is not going the way I want, and that feeling is extreme.
Yeah. And the fact that
I want to say this real fast.
There just made it worse. The fact that he wasn't there just made it worse. Because I feel like I'm his daughter. Okay. I feel like I just have to live up to the fact that I'm his daughter because he is the main teacher. He is the main teacher. So I set a bar for myself because I'm his daughter. I set a bar to myself. But whenever I come, like, not to that bar that I feel like I should be at, then I just feel like I'm a failure and I'm failing.
So what a good mindset, right? To work on inspiring. Because
and the funny thing is,
Hold on. Let me say this one thing. Here's the thing. Your father and you are two totally different people, totally different temperaments, totally different ages, and you have different levels of experience. So if I came into your class and said, oh, I'm going to be able to do it just like her, you know, right? Because I don't have any experience. It's not what I do. So that's where we get caught, is we try to measure ourselves against somebody else's bar instead of going, okay, class was over. What am I proud of? Oh, I'm proud that I didn't run out of room in the middle of the class. I'm glad that I stayed for the entire class. I'm proud that 17 out of the 20 kids actually got something out of it. Now I can go sit with my dad and say, hey, I'm pretty sure you've had this happen. I didn't know what to do with those 3 kids. Can we talk about, you know, what I can do differently so I have a few things to try, because I felt unprepared and I didn't plan for that. So that's the difference of how you take I have failed and you step back and go, you know, gratitude, let me be curious, let me reach for support, and then let me keep working. But part of where we get those limiting beliefs and those core beliefs are, is we are holding ourselves to a standard that is unrealistic. So if someone has been in a situation where they've been violated, you can't expect yourself to respond the same way someone who hasn't been violated would respond, right? Don't think, oh, well, they can do this, why can't I? Because they haven't been through what you've experienced. So you have to take it into your context and just give yourself time to learn what you need to feel successful and do it your way.
The funny thing is, Mom went downstairs and found a parent and was like, basically just told her that I was like really upset because I only focused on those like three kids that were not listening and were like rolling around doing this and that and whatever, and just wanted to give me encouraging words. And I didn't realize that at the time because I think I was on the phone with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was on the phone with him because he saw the long book of a text that I sent him. And we talked for a few minutes and that kind of helped, but I was still like kind of like, ah, because I just really felt like that. I just like failed him. And so Mom came and got me and the mom was like really encouraging, but I didn't like fully want to listen because I just felt like, I just,
your body
like,
wasn't ready to take it in.
Yeah. Yeah. She ended up like giving me a hug and saying it was okay. It's just like some of the kids were just like not they couldn't do it because we were focusing on like motor skills. And so she just says some of the kids just didn't have that in them. And so she gave me a hug. I was like, don't beat yourself up over it. It was so Bradley had fun.
I'm so glad. Way to go, Mom, and way to go, parent, because it is helpful to hear from other people, you know, what we feel is very real and very real to us, but it's not what everyone else sees.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, so now that Kylie's counseling session is over.
She's like, I'm getting in on this.
Drink coffee. So how do you see the concepts that you developed in your book, Expired Mindsets, evolving and changing and maybe even impacting society as we move forward in the future?
Yeah, we are doing so many really amazing things with the principles in Expired Mindsets. And I am enjoying how they're showing up in different places. I'm going to be talking to some students about these concepts at their graduation. Mm. I can't remember what part of North Carolina it's in. I want to say Goldsboro, maybe.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which is exciting. So wanting to share these principles with people early. I use them in a lot of work with nonprofits and organizations to help them even look at how your business is structured and what mindsets do you have about this is the way that we've always done things.
That's
and
awesome.
Because that's there, you're actually limiting your ability to grow and to have reach. And then the other thing that's kind of in the works and I'm about half done is I used to homeschool my kids when they were younger and am a former educator. And so I'm creating a curriculum where families can use Expired Mindsets as a tool to talk about mental health themes. And if, you know, a couple is using it, here's how they can talk about it when it comes to their marriage. But then here's what it would look like if they wanted to talk about it with their teen or their adolescent. And then I have some more hands-on things that you could do if you have younger children. Because one of the things we just simply don't do is we don't talk about what we believe. We don't really let people know what we're experiencing as a family. And then sometimes even as parents, we don't always share with our children, hey, I actually struggle with some of the same beliefs and limiting core beliefs that you do. And here's how I got through it. We might help them when they're in crisis, but I think it would help them if we shared our story more so that they go, oh, wait, you're not perfect. Seriously, I mean, I lost my mom when I was a young adult, and literally up until the moment she passed away and I read her journals, I thought she, you know, I knew she went through difficult times, kind of, but I literally just thought she never struggles. She always does everything great. She's so amazing.
Yes.
So to read her words and go, oh no, like you were totally human. And you actually did, you know what I mean? And I don't think it was intentional. I think we do that because we don't want to put our thing, of course,
right on
our children. But there is a way to have these conversations appropriately so that then we're not afraid to fail as a family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I even tell I have a 21 and a 23-year-old, and I always tell them, I just want you to be you.
Yeah.
You are not living up to anything that I do. And remember, like, I'm in my 40s. I was not doing this when I was in my 20s. So don't be overly impressed right now. But I just want them to be themselves. And I try to be really intentional about telling them things like, oh my gosh, I'm about to do this and I'm nervous.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, this is coming up and I'm kind of overwhelmed because I am an introvert who has to do things on an extrovert level. Mm-hmm. And
we all understand that.
Yes, right? Yeah. So I think it helps them and it normalizes it all. So many things.
I really love to hear that, like, this thing is not just a book that you wrote. This thing is like, it's a key thing in your life that you are kind of using in so many different ways. I absolutely love that. You know, that's great. Something that I definitely want to do. Okay. You look like you're about to say something.
I was going to say one more thing. Mm-hmm. Just for technical difficulties, I won't pull it up right now. But the last thing that I'll say is that my husband is a musician. Mm. And he writes music and he writes songs that goes with the theme in the book. So when we're done, when we're done, I'm going to send you one of the latest songs that he wrote that's called Back to the Valley, that kind of talks about when you go through those low experiences, like hang in there because you're going to reach to the mountaintop. So cool.
Okay, yes, that's awesome.
I'll share it with you.
That is yes. Absolutely. Okay. Basically, I just wanted to say, number one, the link is in the description for your book. I highly recommend anybody getting your book. So if you can, please tell us where they can find more information about you and everything else. Yep. That would be wonderful.
Yep. So you can get the book on Amazon or Audible. I spend the most time on Instagram. So my IG is Dr.Charisse_J, and Charisse is spelled CHARRYSE. And then my website is drcharisse.com. So join me, come hang out, have some fun. I love encouraging people. There's a lot of free resources that I also provide to different people who are trying to navigate difficult seasons of their life. So I always look for it. And make sure that you let me know that you heard me on this podcast. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we, and actually we like to ask this question. Is there anything else? Is there a question that you wish we would have asked you?
Ooh, I really don't think so. I really feel like the questions you guys asked were super, super thorough. So there isn't anything else. I think the only thing I have to say is that I really love what you all are doing, and please don't stop. It's so important. I wish that self-defense was a mandatory part of middle, high school, and college, and this is what you got at this level, this is what you got at this level, and this is what you got at the next. So, you know, if you are a organization or a community or even a business and you're looking at different ways to encourage your team, or hey, we have funds for personal development, don't forget about self-defense, because it is a really crucial aspect. So I want to put that out there for the people that will listen and the people that I know I'm going to share this with, so that they can really look at how they can allot for that in the future.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will see you later, because we're definitely want to have you back on the podcast.
All right. Awesome. All right. I'm here for it. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Don't mind us. We're just jamming out.
Yeah. They can't see that because there's an overlay. So that was every bit as good as I hoped it would be the second time around.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it exceeded my standards for a second time, or for a repeat podcast.
Yeah, my biggest fear, I think, about recording the same thing and asking the same, we ask variation of some of the same questions. It was mainly the same things. But my biggest fear is that we had already done it, so we kind of lose the newness of some of the situations. But I think she actually brought up some points and little pieces that she did not bring up the first time.
Yeah.
And that really helped kind of keep everything completely new and get good, solid, like realistic reactions.
I just love how both professional and personal she is.
Yeah.
Yes.
It makes for very good discussion. Just, even things that you've maybe even covered before, it makes them newly exciting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can tell she's definitely like called to be a therapist.
Yeah.
She is like the type of person that you would want as a therapist, I think.
Yeah.
I believe that. And definitely Kylie would think so. But yeah, guys, check out her book. The link is in the description.
Like all her pages on social media.
Yes, yes, yes. Follow her. Check her out. She is a lot of fun. We are definitely going to try to have her back on in some form or fashion. I know we've talked about doing some other things with her, so we're super excited about that as well.
Yeah. And the topics of conversation today are so much more practical than you would even believe.
Yeah.
Mindset is by far the most important part of self-defense.
Well, just a couple episodes back, you know, you were asked what they thought about the most important part about self-defense. The first thing you said was mindset. And I 100% agree.
Yeah.
I have watched people with really good skills completely fall apart in either training or real self-defense situations. But like stress scenario training, I've watched mm-hmm. people fall apart. Mm-hmm. People that actually had real good skills completely and totally fall apart because they did not have the right mindset and understanding of how self-defense works and how real self-defense works. So it's super, super important. You need that mindset aspect to everything you're doing. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, guys, we will see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye-bye.